everyone. This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are two OncDocs.
This week's episode will be focusing on bone-directed therapies. This is part of a series on supportive care we are starting because this comes up very often, and we'll cover other topics in the next few months. We know that bone metastases cause substantial morbidity, including the need for radiation and or surgery to the bone, pathologic fractures, hypercalcemia of malignancy, and finally can also cause spinal cord compression. And so osteoclast inhibitors, also referred to as anti-resorptive agents, bone-modifying agents or bone-targeting agents, such as bisphosphonates and denosumab, significantly reduce the frequency of and delay the time to onset of skeletal-related events, or SREs, in patients with bone metastases from a wide variety of cancer types.
Definitely. So I think going over these bone-modifying agents is extremely high yield for your clinical practice, whether it's consults, in clinic, and then obviously in the real world, if you go into hematology or oncology, you're going to see these drugs. And even if you're in internal medicine and you're in primary care or hospitalist, you're going to see these medicines. And so terrific topic to cover, also highly testable. So to start us off, what are skeletal-related events? Can you define that for us?
Yes. So these are complications from bone metastases, which include pain, pathologic fractures, the need for radiation therapy to the bone, tumor-related orthopedic surgery interventions, and spinal cord compression.
And so what are the most common types of tumors that can cause bone metastasis?
So bone is the most common site of metastases in cancer, and bone metastases are most prevalent in patients with cancer of the breast, prostate, and lung, but it can, of course, happen in many other tumor types as well. And osteoclast inhibitors are indicated in the management of most patients who have bone metastases and solid tumors, and also have a very established role in multiple myeloma, which we'll cover briefly.
Definitely. So I think back to, I think breast and prostate are the two biggest that we think of. Lung is definitely on there. And then, of course, ideal sarcomas. And so sarcomas, this is the second most common place for sarcomas to metastasize. And so what are the classes of therapies which can prevent skeletal-related events?
So there are two main ones. So we have bisphosphonates and denosumab. So bisphosphonates inhibit osteoclastic bone resorption via attaching to hydroxyapatite binding sites on bony surfaces. And the options for these include zoledronic acid or Zometa. Note that this is contraindicated in patients with a creatinine clearance under 35. We also have pimidronate, which is generally contraindicated for creatinine clearance under 30. However, there is an option specifically in multiple myeloma where you can give it over a longer time period for patients with renal dysfunction. But then less commonly, there are oral options that we don't really use as much in oncology, but there's ibandronate and then there's clodronate. And then the other main class is denosumab, which is a fully human monoclonal antibody that binds to the cytokine rank L. And this is a receptor activator of NFK beta ligand. And this is an essential factor in initiating bone turnover. And so rank L inhibition blocks osteoclast maturation, function, and survival, thus reducing bone resorption. And then one thing to note about denosumab is that there is a potential for rebound fractures when it's stopped.
Great. And so I think knowing those creatinine clearance cutoffs for zoledronic acid, as well as pimidronate, is extremely important. They will try to trick you with those as options in patients who have kidney dysfunction. And so you got to be aware of those and the contraindications. And so what are other important pearls about these agents?
It's very, very important that all patients need dental clearance because of the risk of osteonecrosis of the jaw with these osteoclast inhibitor therapies. And it appears to be approximately 2.8% at 3 years, but it does rise with the duration of these agents. And so patients, if possible, should undergo dental examinations prior to initiation of treatment. Of course, there are settings where patients come in with hypercalcemia of malignancy in the hospital and they don't have time to have dental clearance. But if possible, we always recommend patients to get this. And then we also need to know about the renal impairment, which we just talked about. And it's important to note that denosumab doesn't have that concern with renal impairment. And the standard dosings for patients are usually for denosumab, it's 120 milligrams subcutaneously every 4 weeks, and then zoledronic acid 4 milligrams every 4 weeks. And we'll talk a little bit later about other dosing options. And then really important to also check calcium and vitamin D prior to starting anyone on these agents. and low levels should be corrected prior to initiating any of these. They can specifically worsen hypocalcemia.
Agreed. So I have all of my patients who are on these medicines on daily calcium and vitamin D supplementation. And so now let's dive into more specific roles of how we use these medications, starting with prostate cancer.
So for men with bone metastases and castrate-sensitive prostate cancer, there really isn't a clear use for these agents, although there has been some preclinical data suggesting that the use of bisphosphonates have an anti-tumor effect in prostate cancer. It hasn't been shown to significantly decrease the incidence of bone metastases. And so the vast majority of the data and the indications are for metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer. And so all patients with that setting should have either a bisphosphonate or denosumab. There is no clear information on choosing one over the other. Some may suggest that denosumab has superior efficacy, but really they're both generally used very commonly.
Great. And so the next solid tumor that I think we should talk about are roles of these medications as breast cancer.
Yes. So for postmenopausal women who have a moderate to high risk of distant recurrence receiving any form of adjuvant systemic therapy, there are some guidelines that suggest adjuvant bisphosphonates. However, the absolute benefits are likely to be small. And so this isn't the standard for all patients and clinicians. And then the very clear role for bone modifying agents is in metastatic breast cancer to the bone. And all of these women do need these bone modifying agents. And although monthly denosumab may appear preferable to monthly zoledronic acid in terms of a modest improvement in SRE reduction and analgesic effects, and the fact that it can be given sub-Q instead of IV, it does need to be balanced against the higher drug cost. And also, there has been some data showing that the 3-month dosing interval of zoledronic acid is non-inferior to the monthly dosing. Basically, some pearls for breast and prostate cancer is that if there is a high bone disease burden or if they're highly symptomatic, start off with that monthly dosing of denosumab or bisphosphonates. And then on a case-by-case basis, if someone has a lower bone burden, you can consider the every 12-week dosing at the onset.
Great. And so what other caveats do we need to be aware of going into test day as well as our clinical practice for the use of these bone-modifying agents in breast and prostate cancers?
So I think it's really important to remember that even if you don't have metastatic disease, there are a lot of treatments in both prostate and breast cancer that can lead to increased bone density loss. So we should be thinking about these agents in those settings too. So in prostate cancer, for most men on long-term androgen deprivation therapy, such as leuprolide, so if they're on it long-term, like more than 18 months, all of these patients should have a baseline bone density scan or DEXA. And for women who have localized breast cancer, who have factors that may contribute to accelerated bone loss, including oophorectomy, chemotherapy-induced ovarian dysfunction, ovarian suppression due to adjuvant endocrine therapy, or if they're on aromatase inhibitors, and then for tamoxifen, it does lead to increased bone mineral density loss in premenopausal women. A DEXA should be done in these women, and you should also consider bone modifying agents for anyone with a DEXA scan showing osteopenia or osteoporosis.
Great. And so switching gears from solid tumors, what is the role of these bone modifying agents in hematologic malignancies?
So in multiple myeloma, they are indicated for all patients with active myeloma, regardless of the presence of lytic lesions, as long as there's no contraindication. And it has been shown to reduce the risk of new skeletal events and reduce myeloma-related bone pain.
And so can you tell us if there's a role for these bone-modifying agents in any other cancers?
Yes. So osteoclast inhibitors are indicated for management of most patients with other solid tumors who have bone metastases. And so for patients in whom skeletal events are unlikely, though, and who have limited expected survival, for example, extensive and progressive visceral metastases, you can consider holding off on a case-by-case basis.
Great. And one last pearl, or another tumor that we use this in, we actually use denosumab as the primary treatment for treating giant cell tumor of the bone, a rare bone sarcoma. I don't think they will test you on this, but in case they do, you guys are now prepared for the rarest of the rare. And so when we're talking about bone-modifying agents, what's the duration of the therapy these patients need to be on?
So for most patients in whom it's indicated, there's no data on the optimal duration of therapy, One approach is to continue it indefinitely in the absence of excessive toxicity, as long as treatment is consistent with patient and clinician goals. However, it's also acceptable for patients, for example, with well-controlled oligometastatic disease, to interrupt bisphosphonate therapy after a period of 2 years. And then for patients who have experienced an SRE while on bisphosphonate or denosumab and are still receiving anti-cancer therapy, we suggest continuing these agents rather than stopping them. And then, as I had mentioned earlier, know that if you do stop denosumab, there is that risk of rebound fractures. So in some scenarios, a bisphosphonate may also be indicated.
Great. So I think this is an awesome episode talking about a high yield topic of bone modifying agents. And what are our key takeaways?
So all patients should have dental evaluation if possible prior to starting an osteoclast inhibitor, whether it's a bisphosphonate or denosumab. Also make sure you look at the creatinine, check calcium and vitamin D, and advise on supplementation. These are things that are very commonly tested. There is a very clear role of these agents in castrate resistant prostate cancer and breast cancer with bone metastases. But also consider it in earlier stages and do screening DEXAs for those at risk for osteopenia or osteoporosis. The most commonly used options are denosumab 120 milligrams sub-Q every 4 weeks or zoledronic acid every 4 weeks and then de-escalate to every 3 months. But on a case-by-case basis, you can start at the three-month dosing. And then the selection of denosumab versus zoledronic acid is based on patient and clinician preference, route, frequency, as well as administration. And for all patients with myeloma, these agents are indicated regardless of lytic lesions.
Great. And so as always, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Good luck with studying for boards. And please feel free to reach out to us with any corrections or comments on our Instagram or our Twitter, @OncDocs. Have a great week.